Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt, and if you're one of the very few that watch on YouTube, you'll notice that I not only am sporting a ridiculous mustache, but also hockey hair, because it's the Beer League playoffs, and we're trying to wrap up a championship, if not Thursday, this weekend. I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt. This podcast is brought to you by Racetech Suspension and Engines. Let's be honest, it's been a while since you tore the suspension off your motorcycle, or maybe even took the engine out of your bike to get some service done to it. Make sure that you're in tip-top rolling into a brand new season. Hit up our friends over at Racetech, and you save some money by mentioning Big MX Radio. Like I said, I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt, with me on the line for his seventh appearance on the Big MX Radio podcast. I don't even know if that number is correct, but it feels right. Kyle Wolf, welcome to the show. Kyle, how's it going?
Good, man. You had me caught off guard when you said seven. I'm like, man, has it really been that many already?
Oh, it's gotten close.
Got it within a couple, probably.
Yeah, this is either seven or six or eight or something along those lines. I don't think anyone's cared to count, but yeah, let's just go with seven. This is your seventh time on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me back on.
So when I text you to come on, in your own mind's eye, what is the over-under on me either being late or having to reschedule?
It's pretty good on the over.
On the over, you're thinking like almost like when Brad says today at 7, he might mean either 8 o'clock today or next week.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. Well, hey, I appreciate you being completely honest with me. And hey, I appreciate you.
In your defense, you're consistent in that regard.
I am consistently inconsistent with my scheduling. Punctuality has never been a... I don't know. That would be a strength of mine. Maybe perhaps something I need to work on, put that one on the bulletin board. It's the motocross industry, man. We roll with the punches. I had a podcast with Cade Bradley yesterday. He won the Ultimate Rider thing. He doesn't even know what series he's going to race with his new team or what really entails. He's riding the bike tomorrow for the first time. So, and when he told me that, that was the most motocross thing I've ever heard in my entire life, that you won a prize and you don't even know what the fuck you won.
You know what though? At this point, that's the way to do it.
Just let it buck.
Let it buck, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Just don't miss any tough blocks or you will be penalized at least two positions. We'll get into that as well. We're talking supercross. We are done with Nashville. That's got to be a bucket list event for me going forward. Travel to the United States has been more expensive / I wouldn't say sketchy, but like there's definitely like the TSA stuff is stuff that's sort of had me sort of thinking twice about booking some flights down to enjoy a supercross race. Have you noticed that at all? Less international fans at these races? You were in attendance this last weekend, were you not?
I was, international fans, it's hard to tell, especially with Nashville. There was just, first you got to have a good amount of fans before you can start saying less of anything. Ooh. And it's been like
was
that.
It, was this last, what, poorly attended?
It's been poorly attended the last three times we've been there. I mean, I went 2 years ago and I mean, I sat in industry seating because I've got a season long credential through Feld for, you know, to be in there, and I could have gone anywhere I wanted to. This past weekend, same thing. I could have gone anywhere I wanted to. 4 years ago when it was back to a day race, wasn't a whole lot better, and I was near the exit tunnel, the entrance and exit tunnel from the racetrack. And it's just, I think Nashville's a good place to do it. I think there's just too much going on all at once in order to draw that crowd in. And for as expensive as a city as Nashville is, mm-hmm. So if you ever come to Nashville for the Supercross, you are going to get your eyes are going to go wide when you look at the hotel prices.
Oh yeah.
But
book them now.
Yeah. Book them now for next year. There's just too much going on. And I think with the ticket prices of Supercross and everything else, I don't know if it's a perfect alignment. And I don't know why exactly. I'm just theorizing at this point. But yeah, for as good a town as Nashville is, theoretically, to bring Supercross in, it just hasn't worked. And even the first time they did it back in 2019, it was a good attendance, but it wasn't anywhere near close to selling out by any means.
Right. And we were just in St. Louis. It took me driving from Winnipeg, Canada to Loretta Lynn's to realize how close St. Louis and Nashville, Tennessee are to each other. It's not a long drive whatsoever. Do you feel like there's a number of things at hand here, and I think we can sort of unpack them. It's the dog days of Supercross. We are well into rounds 13, 14. The number of guys who are in the championship is less and less. You could argue there's essentially two guys that are in the championship in the 450 class, and essentially only two exist in the 250, considering one championship is already wrapped up, and Cole Davies, like, the only races he hasn't been, like, lights out are ones that he's ended up pitted against Hayden Deegan, who is the class of the field. So, and then you also have spring. People have, like, stuff to do. They might start doing some of their own riding. And also just market fatigue. Like, if you're in St. Louis, and where hotels are probably cheaper, maybe you live in Missouri, like, it sounds like a much cheaper or less expensive event to go to. And then Nashville, of course, with all the glitz and glam and stuff like that, but a lot of those fans were already at a race 10 days prior.
Yeah, I think to your point, like, when you get into that late grind of the season, I think that is something that needs to be taken a look at by Feld. Like, hey, and I know they're very reluctant to do this, but when we get to that point where Nashville is not well attended, Cleveland this weekend could go either way. But then you look at some of the other events, like, I know a couple of rounds last year in the Northeast, you know, despite the huge fan base up there and a huge rider base up there, some of those Northeast races weren't well attended. I think the Mudder in Foxborough wasn't a great one, but this is the time where you really got to analyze and be like, hey, should we cut back on the number of events, give these guys, you know, a 2-week break in between some of these rounds, but make it to where, you know, even though the TV coverage is so good now, so why is a family of four, a family of five going to spend $500, $600+, you know, even if they're an hour's drive away, why are they going to spend that kind of money when the TV is so good? But if we do less races where there's less opportunity for somebody to blow a championship wide open, like what Hayden did already, like what Davies has been doing, could that bring more of the fans back in and maybe make a bigger crowd at a lot of these events? Yeah, at the end of the day, it's, you know, maybe less money in Feld's pocket.
Never going to do that.
Could you make it back up for more ticket sales for less races? I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, there's we're about to be talking about an 18-game season in the NFL. And after literally decades of a 16-game season, teams going 8-8 like my beautiful Cowboys that disappoint me every week, every month, every year. But I think, like, this was such a beautiful season. You spin the clocks back 8 weeks, Kyle, and you've got multiple winners out of the first three rounds. You've got Cooper Webb, like, not winning any of the Triple Crown races, but getting himself an overall. Ken Roczen, a renaissance season. This Hunter Lawrence, who has totally come into form physically, mentally, racecraft, the whole nine yards. And over the last couple of weeks, that's the sound of all the air coming out of the series for me, both 250s, 450s. You can consume this sport week to week, but from a championship standpoint, this is not good.
No, and I don't think really the air started getting let out of it. I think the air actually filled up the balloon a little bit at Detroit when Hunter crashed like he did.
Of course.
And then And then it got even more air with Kenny going back to back at Detroit and St. Louis. But yeah, in a three race time, it went from we were about to overinflate and pop the balloon on this entire series to, yeah, it's now it's just half full and we've got a sliver of hope left for one more shot at this. Otherwise, it's going to be a runaway, basically.
Yeah, essentially, not to put too much pressure on one Ken Roczen, especially considering how Eli Tomac has performed over the last 2 weeks. He's the only one who can legitimately step in between Hunter Lawrence and riding off into this championship. He could very well have a 20-point lead going into the final round. He needs to get 15th, and then he's just doing high fives and spraying champagne with his brother, who is probably have his ears pinned back to right now, with his sights set on the outdoor championship.
Yeah, like Hunter, once he finally got that first win, like that's when the wheels started really, you know, turning in motion for him. He's got four now, and save for that crash in Detroit, I mean, he's been lights out. He hasn't been outside of the top five all year long, other than Detroit. And it's, you know, there were so many people preseason that said, you know, especially once Jet went out, it was Hunter for champion. I didn't buy into that just because Hunter hadn't won a race yet. And I mean, it would have been the same thing 15 years ago or 16 years ago with Dungy. Dungy hadn't won a race, but Dungy was also a rookie. Hunter was right in year three. Hunter was entering year three in the 450 class, hadn't had a win yet. You know, had a couple of podiums. You know, he didn't qualify at A1 his first year out. He missed the better than half of the season last year with a collarbone injury. And so he hadn't put, for me anyway, in my opinion, he hadn't put the proof in the pudding that he was able to contend for the title. Once he finally got that win, then all hell broke loose, and he's been the model of consistency. It didn't hurt anything when he and Roczen came together at, what was that, Houston, I think, and he was the huge benefactor of that one, and that was really what kind of blew this thing open, despite the fact that it was only 5 points going into Nashville. Kenny, after Detroit, had that Houston incident not happened in the sand, Kenny would have been the points leader going into Nashville, and yeah, we'd have a completely different championship, and now it's 10 points. So I think you gotta look at that. But yeah, back to the whole Hunter thing, not to make this, you know, extremely long-winded, but he'd have to do something really, really stupid to screw this up. This weekend might cause that, just because it's going to be soft. It's supposed to be a triple crown. I'm honestly wondering if they're going to change the format because it's going to be soft. Like, I'm honestly wondering. Certainly there's been discussions.
Yeah, that's a call they can make. Like, they don't do the triple crown trophy thing anymore, do they?
They probably do. We don't know anything about it, because it's not like through two triple crowns they've said, hey, this guy's leading the 250 class, this guy's leading the 450 class.
Yeah.
It's like they haven't said that shit. Well, I guess it's only for the 450 class, since it's, you know, two on one coast and one on the other for the 250 guys. So it'd only be 450s. But yeah, they haven't said a damn thing through two triple crowns on who's actually leading those points.
I think it would be neat to have the East-West shootouts be triple crowns.
I've thought about
it's
that.
So many bikes, so the, but holy
more so
crap.
For even up on, you know, give these 250 guys the same number of races. Because you remember back in the day when it was 16 races,
yep,
and it was 7 on one coast, 8 on the other, and then the one shootout in Vegas at the end of the
right
year.
Which
I miss those days.
I do miss those days, because sometimes it mattered, sometimes it didn't. I actually really liked the years where they basically treated the heat races as main events, and then it sort of just graduated on to like a final race of the night where it was usually Andrew Short that would come out of the woodwork and win.
Somebody like a Short or a Ramsey or something like that, you know, didn't win the title, but then came out and won the shootout. And I like that. And back in the, I mean, you remember back in the 90s and the early to mid 2000s, I mean, it meant something.
For sure. Oh, like the RC now, stormed off in Vegas.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, was that 97? 97? I think so.
Yeah, it was 97, yeah.
97 just comes unglued, just had the most terrible night. And, yeah, he's like, I'm going to go fucking kill everyone outdoors who gives a shit.
Well, and then I remember the next year, it was the whole storyline was the kid versus the old man because he and Dowd went at it like
that's
a couple
right.
of stray dogs over a steak. Like that was one of the best 125 races of the year. And
yeah.
There was
That's
nothing
right.
on the line other than bragging rights.
Yeah, the old dog and RC.
Yeah, and now, I mean, like if it was the same format now, the only guys that I think that, you know, would care about the term bragging rights would be Hayden and Cole. And at this point, maybe Seth, but that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. Did Eli delete his tweet? I was gonna pull it up. Maybe he replied to it. Yeah.
Did he delete it?
No, he didn't delete it. It's in his replies. I'm gonna talk about it right away here. But yeah, like I don't know about you, but I feel like I feel like you're a bit less so. But I feel like the 2026 Supercross season is really stumbling down the stretch for me. And, I just like, it's not that I don't want Hunter to win. It's not that at all. I'm so proud of him. I think that the work that he has been putting in for so many years is paying off and it's showing in spades. He's improved in almost every area of his game. I'm going to be stoked for him when he's able to, wrap this up. And I truly believe that that's what's going to happen. I've loved seeing, Ken Roczen in his rarefied form where he's fast on that first lap and sprinting away from everybody and he looks fast and he's got a Kickstarter and the whole nine yards. I love it. And then now with 10 points and nobody really able to get in the mix as far as maybe Chase gets the starts figured out, but, how excited, what's your excitement level for the final four rounds of Supercross compared to? Compared to how excited you are for outdoors.
It definitely went down after Nashville. I still got a little bit of hope left because we got two more soft races to go. We got Cleveland and Philly, but then we got two hard pack races with Denver and Salt Lake to end of the year. So my enthusiasm level was a bit lower than it was 4 days ago, but I still have a little bit of hope that Kenny will, at least for Cleveland and Philadelphia, especially with Cleveland, but it being a triple crown, because Kenny's been good at those. Historically, he's been better than Hunter with those. So I got a little bit of hope that Kenny will at least tighten this back up to, you know, 7 points. Maybe it could be back to 5. But yeah, I'm ready to get outdoor started at this point because, I mean, Jet should be back. It's not sounding great. If he is back for Paula, it's going to be, he's not going to be at 100% from the way it sounds, but Hayden's going to be coming in. I am really excited about Prado. He's had such a good year in Supercross and we know his credentials in motocross. So I'm really excited to see what happens there. And then I'm looking at guys like Justin Cooper to have a good season. I'm going to sneakily look for Ferrandis. Despite the fact that he's not on a full-fledged bike, apples to apples, like a factory KTM, like a factory Yamaha, but he's had a rough few years, mainly because of his concussions and everything. But I feel like this year he's finally, you know, even though it's a brand new team, brand new bike and everything, he's going to show me something. But yeah, I'm ready to see what kind of fight we have for outdoors, because at this point, you know, I mean, unless something really changes again, you know, over the next two races, I'm not expecting a whole lot overall from out of these last four rounds.
Yeah, I think all we can really hope for is Eli just magically snapping out of whatever slump that he's in now and riding the way he not only did in the heat race, but in the 10 of the 12 rounds prior to this last weekend. It's been a bit of a mystery with Eli Tomac. Some of the most dominant rides we've seen, we've had times where he looks like an absolute beast on that KTM. He doesn't look as big on it as I thought he would. And this track was, this track this last weekend was very, 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 very challenging, especially with the surface of how dry it was. But he seemed, that seemed to be right up his alley. So, like, unless he's able to just like snap back into, like the, what he was doing prior, or Chase Sexton figures out the starts, it's kind of a table set for two.
It really is. And I mean, you know, I mean, the $1 million question right now is what the hell's going on with Eli? And
perfect.
He's, I don't get it. They said they, you know, changed the bike. I don't know if they even actually said this. I got word that this was, you know, what was going on, you know, over the last 3-4 weeks, that they, that he was, you know, hunting for a certain setting, and they got so far off the reservation, they were like, okay, we need to reset this thing back to how we had it at the beginning of the year, which ultimately begs the question before I even get into the rest of this. If it was so good at the beginning of the year, why in God's name would you fuck with it? Pardon my language, but why? I mean, there's a common saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. So why would he even be looking other than clickers? Why would you change anything other than clickers on the suspension? And I mean, he, it sounded like he went back to what he had, and it showed in qualifying. And I mean, I was there. I watched him. I was like, oh shit, he's back. You heard him after the first qualifying session. He was smiling. He was like, I got hard pack back. We got a good bike again. And I'm talking to a couple of my buddies in the stands watching this, and we're all like, if he gets a start, they're screwed. And yeah, it was more, and I mean, he made that more evident in the heat race. And then he got a little bit hosed in a sense by that 20 minute delay for the, before the 250 main with the timing and scoring glitch. But then he went back to that paddle tire.
Yes.
And I know that thing is his bread and butter, but that was concrete.
It was his undoing. That thing, I don't like it.
I mean,
not a lot of other guys had it on, and other professional racers like Joey Savacci, who was on the Pulp MX show on Monday, said he was watching Eli trying to skim the whips with that thing, and he's just shaking his head. So when another professional racer sees what you've got on with an eyebrow raised, me like, and sees you struggling, like I question good judgment on that side of things. And then on top of that, he's said nothing. Oh, nothing's wrong. Everything is fine. Well, if you go from winning multiple races and looking dominant and like putting your best foot forward every single weekend, and then you all of a sudden start having to battle for 8 through 12, guys like myself, other motocross media professionals will start to speculate. There must be something going on with the bike. Maybe there's something going on with the body. We've heard from Justin Brayton. We've heard from Lewis Phillips. And in response, Eli says, you are spewing absolute garbage. Ian, Carlos, and Steph, debriefed in the bus after the race. Then Jade and Ryan stopped by. You have zero credibility with that statement. You're a hack. And that was, of course, directed to Lewis Phillips, which is a shot across the bow to a young reporter who, by and large, my experience with Lewis has always been first class. This is a kid who has come across from Europe. He traveled the world with the MXGP series. He's extremely diligent. He knows his shit. He knows how to ask for information. He knows, and he's dogged about getting information from these people. He knows how to build relationships in this industry. You know that because he's done what he's done so far. To me, what Lewis has done with his background and how he's built relationships and built media companies, and the credibility, and he's basically put Vital on the map as a credible media source by himself. And then for Eli, of course, and these guys never like what they hear on social media, after giving us nothing, takes a shot at Penn publicly, basically, and then calling names, like you're a hack? Eli, you're a professional athlete. Guys like us, it's our job to see what we're seeing and use our experience, knowledge, and our ability to find information and come up with a reason why a guy who looked like he was on his way to another championship now struggling to be in the top five.
Yeah. Eli didn't handle that in the best way. And I think maybe Lewis could have wrote that a little bit differently to give himself an out.
No, like, who gives a shit? It's sports media. Fuck off.
Like, it is. But at the same time, I mean, if Eli or anybody else says to anybody, hey, we don't want Lewis around anymore, more than likely that's going to happen. And it's wrong. So, I mean, Lewis, in that sense,
it looks even worse on them.
It does, but you've seen the response online ever since that tweet got posted. Look how many people have been just flaming Lewis over that deal. And I think Lewis is a credible journalist. He's one absolutely of the most credible ones because he absolutely asked the questions that a journalist in this sport should be asking. The rest of those guys, and I'm not trying to blow them out or, you know, whatever, because I do know a lot of these guys and I'm friends with a lot of these guys. I don't think they ask the questions that need to be asked. Granted, I know why they don't ask the questions, because they're not going to get the answers regardless from most of these guys. But Lewis knows that also, but he's still going to at least ask the questions. So it's on the record for everybody to hear. He asked the question. The writer didn't give the answer. So I, you know, respect Lewis in that regard, that he will at least ask the question, knowing full well, more than, you know, with 90% of the riders, he's not going to get the answer that he wants, but he'll at least ask the question and put him on the spot and be like, hey, if you're not going to tell me, that's worse on you than it is on me asking the question. And that is what happened here. For anybody that's like, you know, really looking at this closely and actually put some thought into this, because that's, I mean, anybody that's actually flaming Lewis online or DMing him saying, go fuck yourself, they're not looking at this. They're not people that actually think about shit.
No, those are just Eli Tomac fanboys who don't understand that in sports media, you have to ask tough questions. And when you're given no information, your choice is to either say, like, yeah, everything must be fine, or use your experience to come up with a plausible reasoning for what's happening, or poke fun at the fact that this situation is a fucking clown show and that professionals are not being forthcoming with the truth.
Right. And there's also a lot of, I mean, I honestly,
it happens
wonder,
in every sport, but this sport is probably the worst for it.
It is. And I honestly wonder what would be said in the interviews from the riders if they had, you know, more leniency or whatever from the teams to say, hey, here's what's wrong. And if it's a bike thing, if the rider's doing everything that he can to fix shit and it's not happening and it's the bike, I'm not saying go blow out the team, but say, hey, we cannot get this right. We are throwing everything at the wall. Nothing is sticking, but we are trying. That is an acceptable answer that puts some of the blame on the team, some of the blame on the rider, but it doesn't make everyone look like assholes. Or it doesn't make it look like they're not doing anything. And it's not, you're not trying to hide the fact that there's a problem. Saying nothing means everything possible is on the table.
Yeah. And so that's
where everyone's
unless
wrong
you
with.
Want to dispel all those, you have to come out with something.
I mean, I saw something the other day where I can't even remember what the guy's name was, but it was a third party post or whatever. But according to some guy, I can't remember the guy's name, the theory was Eli's got COVID. I'm like, bullshit. Anybody with COVID is not going to go set the fastest time in qualifying. I don't care who it is. If you got COVID, you are not going to set the fastest qualifying, even if the track's perfect.
I think it's arm pump, to be honest. If you had to, you didn't ask me, but if someone did ask me, I think it's arm pump. It's like that, and that's why he would be able to do it in a heat race. And then when it comes to the main event, you'd completely different guy.
But you'd also think that if it doesn't happen in a 6 minute heat race, why in 6 minutes or 8 minutes or 10 minutes, why couldn't he have gone from 14th to sixth? He went from 14th to 10th and that was it. And he got to ninth because somebody went down or somebody went off the track or Prado went off the track. So there's ninth. Then he tucks the front end on the simplest turn of the racetrack, which, I mean, we've all done that. So, I mean, I'm not going to fault him too much for that one. But he didn't even look like he was racing into the corner when that happened. Like, that was the most random front end tuck on a flat corner I've seen in a long time. And it was just, I mean, if he was being aggressive, if he looked aggressive going into there, okay, fine. He didn't even look like he was aggressive. And I don't know. Like, I mean, like I said at the beginning of this segment, the million-dollar question is what the hell's going on, and nobody has an answer. I mean, maybe Eli doesn't even have an answer. Maybe Roger and Ian and Jade, I mean, Steph, maybe they don't have an answer either. But say that. That's a perfectly acceptable answer.
Right.
Say, we don't effing know.
So, like, we're drafting at straws here. Rather than, nope, everything's good. I don't know. It's fucking on Cleveland, I guess. And I guess it's the time of the podcast to talk about this upcoming round of Monster Energy Supercross. I did look on Ticketmaster and there's not a lot of tickets available in the lower bowl. If you want to spend $189 per ticket to get in, that's a Canadian price. So that would probably be somewhere around like the 130 range for you guys. Cause the Canadian dollar is suffering. But yeah, looking to be possible mutter right by the water, right off the lake. Cleveland, I don't know that like tourism is a big thing there, but yeah, it's gonna have to be because Supercross is coming to town and it might rain. What are your thoughts?
The tourism there, despite the fact that Cleveland, you know, gets the rep that it does, it's actually a good city. There's you know, touristy areas around there.
You work for Cleveland?
No, but I've been there a few different times. I've actually gotten to see the city.
Good. Okay.
But I mean, if people are you know, coming into town a couple days early, maybe they can catch an Indians game or something. If there's an Indians game Saturday night, they're fucked.
Ooh.
But I will say, as far as the track goes, though, the Dirtworks guys busted their ass. They left Sunday from Nashville.
They're the Guardians now, by the way.
They've got it covered. Everything that they have built that's, you know, ready to go. If they had to run a practice tomorrow, everything that's already built is covered. So,
and there's no press this weekend, right?
I don't know.
I don't think they're doing press.
That's weird.
My expectation is they're not. And there is absolutely a Cleveland Guardians baseball game on the 18th.
Is there really? What's on? Yeah.
6:10, baby. Orioles in town. Is that not a divisional matchup? Like, shit. Yeah.
Guys, come on, man. So this, all right, there's exhibit number 73 on why we need to.
What's the over under that Mathis is going to the game on the Friday night? Gotta
be. Who are they playing?
It's a four game set against the Orioles. Saturday's game three. So game two would be.
Is he gonna be passed out in the hotel room Friday night after his VO2 max test?
I gotta think that I think the best thing that Steve Mathis can do is crush that VO2 max test because you know he's been training for it. He's probably a little bit nervous to put on the mask with that makes him look like a fighter pilot, but he's gonna crush that and then he's gonna do the 9-9 challenge at the Cleveland Guardians Baltimore Orioles game at Progressive Field in Cleveland, Ohio, which is this Friday coming up, 6:10 first pitch. I hope that they maybe get a Supercross athlete to throw out a pitch or two. Maybe if someone doesn't make the night show, is there someone that doesn't make the night show that can throw out the first pitch on Saturday? Did I lose
possible.
You?
That's possible.
Should,
oh, wait a minute. Wait
should
a minute.
David Pulley,
Wait
should
a minute.
David Pulley, if he, when he doesn't make the night show, can he throw out the first pitch?
No, you gotta get a guy that's close to the area. You gotta get Cade or you gotta get Carnell.
Carnell could do it. Cade could do it.
Yeah.
I think Cade could probably get it across the plate. Who do you think's got a faster fastball? Cade Clayson or Logan Carnell?
I'll go Cade.
I think he's more of just an overall athlete too, right?
I would say so.
There's a lot of motocross guys that are not, they're not stick and ball guys at all. Like,
no, not a bit.
You put a baseball bat in the hand and they couldn't look more awkward. But I think if we were doing a motocross industry softball game, I'm picking Cade somewhat high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I played basketball with some of the guys. This was 10 years ago at Club MX. And I mean, Henry Miller was still there.
Mm-hmm.
And like McAdoo, and like he was still there at the time and everything. And yeah, there's a reason those guys race motorcycles.
Fair enough. Well, but also, you know, it's very common amongst all those guys. They all come from cold climates where they can't just ride all the time. Like they might have had to like play some intramural sports or like get into like a middle school game before they got pulled out of school or something. Yeah. Kind of a rite of passage. Like I'm sure even a guy like Ryder McNabb up here from Canada, I'm sure he can skate. Maybe not skate like the wind like I can, but I'm sure he can put on a pair of hockey skates and whirl around the ice. Before I let you go here on the Big MX Radio podcast, Kyle, you are my eyes, ears, and everything over at the GNC series because I haven't been to one. You're at all these races. You produce content with it. You follow it. You analyze it. You're all over that thing. Give me the storylines. What's going on? And give us a full update on all things GNCC.
Well, we're back at it this weekend. We've only had one race in the last like 6 weeks, which has actually been nice because I kind of needed the break with everything that I had going on. But we're going to our first technical race of the year. We're back to Kentucky for the first time in a long, long time. It's going to be rocky, going to be technical. They're cutting in new trails for it. Through the four rounds, we've had four winners, which has actually been really cool. This weekend with how rocky and technical it's going to be, couple guys that stand out on the list of winners would be Ben Kelly, the defending champion. He's a very technical rider. Another one would be Jordan Ashburn. He won the title back in 2022. And of course you got Stu, you got Grant Davis that just won the most recent round. And he's got to dig himself out of a points hole.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a very interesting season. I think, yeah, we've got four winners. I think there's room for two.
Do you
maybe
do the
three.
National Enduro Series as well?
No.
No. What do you do when those come? You go to the Nationals?
What, the Enduros?
No, you do like outdoor Nationals. You don't do motocross races. What do you do in the summertime when the series takes a 6 week or 8 week break?
This year I'll be at some of the Nationals working on some things where it might bring me to some or most of the outdoors. Ooh. This summer. So
Thunder Valley?
Thunder Valley.
Under High Point?
Definitely. I think definitely High Point. I mean, High Point's the closest one for me. Where I'm getting a little bit of scheduling conflicts from my brother for some family stuff. And I don't know if he realizes that it's that week, High Point weekend and Father's Day weekend and all that when he's scheduling all this stuff. But, now High Point would be one of them. I haven't been to Red Bud for the National in 15 years. So that'd be a good one to go to.
We got muddy at Diz Nations, though.
We did get muddy at Diz Nations.
I'm going to go to Diz Nations again this year.
You going to go to Erne?
Yeah, man. I love France. I love France.
When I heard it was Erne, I'm like, please let it work out where I can go to that race.
Yeah. It's just
that's
like,
the one with everybody on the hillside, right?
Yeah. Like yeah, that's like, I, like yeah. Did you go 2 years ago? 3 years
to,
ago?
Not Erne?
3 years ago.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Did you go to that
no,
one?
Because the first international one was when we were sitting next to each other in the media room at
Matterly Basin.
That was the first international one that I went to.
Okay. Yeah, no, I've done two international ones and one in, obviously I went to 22 at Redbud. Was not there this last year, just with work and everything. But yeah, I gotta circle on the date and, honestly, like probably in the next 3 months, book some flights and hotels and stuff like that, because that is, it's one of the best races of the year. It's absolutely picturesque. You're in like north central France, essentially. Like you're about 3 hours outside of, Paris.
Yeah.
Like you're just south of Normandy, for those who know where that is.
I want to see that. I just want to witness that atmosphere. And I thought we would have gotten it when we were in England 2 years ago, but the weather kind of shit the bed on that one. It was just wasn't, you know, what I had it envisioned, but I know
105 screaming people. It was honestly electric. I need to get on a soapbox here. because the coolest thing about that track is that like the start is sort of like tucked in behind. So that whole whole hill can't see shit off the start. They're looking at the TVs. But when those three when everyone comes over and then drops down into, there's a straightaway that basically leads into this roller section that goes into this uphill triple that is absolutely insane, by the way. It's basically just a big face and there's a hill. You're supposed to land up there, son. And when the gate drops and it's Roman Frevre and Tom Vial 1 and 2, the place went fucking crazy.
You can hear the crowd over.
I have chills right now.
You can hear the crowd over Paul and JT in a fucking truck.
Yes. Oh, anyway, it was just the place exploded.
Like, you're gonna be shitting me right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to be somebody in the middle of that, because relieving yourself would have been not an option unless you do it right then and there. But yeah, if I have anything to say about it, which thankfully I do. You and I will be in Erne, France in about 6 months' time, just having the time of our lives and covering this most beautiful sport in the world.
I wanted to ask you this. Lo and behold, yet again, I'm going to go back to Nashville on this.
Go for it.
Lo and behold, yet again.
Worst track of the year, by the way. Worst track.
You know, it was like dirt-wise, it was the worst track. But it lent itself into the best racing of the season. But it was good.
I liked
racing
the way the whoops, because it did the whoops went into a triple, and then there was the triple coming out of sand, right?
Yeah, it was a whoops, a six pack, and then the 90 into the sand.
Right, so the 90 into the sand, like that was tech. You had to be a smooth operator to like angle yourself. Basically, like they were diving into that 90, and then like drawing across from left to right in order to triple to the inside of that sand. That was, you are a technician if you can pull that off. There's very few guys who could get it done.
Yeah.
What were you going to say though?
I'm sure you've seen it, but the laundry list of penalties this week.
Oh my God.
The five guys that got popped, it was at the end of the main event for jumping on lights. So Jeremy Hand was one of them. He didn't even get to hear the explanation from Jeremy Albrecht because he was at the medical tent because Derek Kelly landed on him on the last lap.
Sounds about right.
And screwed him up. So they said that he jumped on the leader lights. He had to roll the face of the triple regardless. And then he doubles out. And it was because Gavin Towers crashed.
Yep.
Jeremy flips out when he hears this. He's like, I was already at the top of the jump when he's crashing, which he was. The other four guys behind him, they weren't. But at the same time, how are you supposed to see those lights when you're so worried about your front end knifing on you on concrete?
Yes.
Number one. The one the thing that gets me about the whole penalty list is they popped 35 guys, not that many, but you know what I'm saying,
yep,
on that list. And the one guy they didn't get, and I, this isn't me like saying, you know, what the hell to the rider. This is, I can't believe however many AMA officials there and nobody caught this. Gavin Towers got away with one.
Why do you hate Gavin Towers?
I don't hate Gavin Towers. I just can't believe nobody saw it because it was the first lap and he did the exact same thing that Ferrandis got popped for, except his was way worse and nobody saw it, which is amazing to me. All those fights. And he did it right in front of a flagger, right in front of a Dig Dug with a helmet on. The dude watched him do it. He turned his head with him and not one AMA official saw it. I couldn't believe it. He would have gotten docked six spots probably for that in comparison to Ferrandis. And I cannot believe after the laundry list of penalty infractions that the AMA came up with and nobody saw that. It was, yeah, it was amazing.
You had jumping on a red cross. Yeah, you had Hand, Phillips, Floyd, Adams, Clout. They were all, each received a five championship point penalty. If you take away 5 points around from Ryder Floyd, like, really?
Right.
Okay. And then the Hammaker one is the one that, like, if we're going to the letter of the rule, okay, I guess that's a penalty. But I'll also say this. The barrier or the tough block that he went around, it moved. It wasn't, had it been where it was before he crashed, he wouldn't have made it just like go right past it. He would have driven right over it in order to get back in there. So,
yeah.
Like, how do you justify penalizing someone for not hitting or not adhering to a barrier that is not where it was originally intended to be?
Right. And the way I look at it is not like, I know that the teams and everything are trying to, they're telling the AMA, hey, we want less discretion on the penalties.
Right.
You know, or what qualifies to be penalized, you know. But the thing I look at is, look at where he was when he got up. Look at how his bike was positioned. And look at the oncoming traffic that he had to deal with. So say he spins his bike, and we've seen this a million times, whether it's the guy on the motorcycle the first time in his whole friggin' life, or the 15-year pro that's won 100 championships, everybody at one point or another stalls the bike.
Yes.
Pivoting it around. What happens if Seth does that and whoever was coming next behind him plows right into his ass?
Yeah.
Then are you going to penalize him for an unsafe reentry?
I suppose so. I don't know. I think the AMA have their heads up their ass full time on this one. Like this whole season has just been a fucking gong show. Like, and I have a lot of respect for a lot of the people who are making those decisions. I think in hindsight, they would look back at this season and say, we need to be better. Period.
Absolutely. I mean,
and I can say that about myself too. Like,
right. I mean, technically the face of the AMA, as far as like those decisions and everything, is Mike Pelletier. And I like Mike. Don't get me wrong. I've known him a long time. I think he's a good dude. But I guess as far as the actual decisions being made, I guess it's committee or like three guys, essentially. I don't agree with that. I mean, I don't think in any other sport, whether it's stick and ball or motorsport, is it, you know, I think it all comes down to one person. I think, you know, there are multiple people that analyze it, but that is to feed opinions on, hey, this is why this happened, this is why this happened, and so forth. But it's ultimately up to the discretion of one person to say, hey, he's penalized, here's what the penalty is. And granted, as much of a shit show as this has been with the AMA this year, it is not as bad as Steve Whitelock. It is not as bad as John Gallagher.
No.
Like, we need to get back to the Duke Finch days.
Yeah.
Duke had shit on point back when he did in the 80s and the 90s.
Damn right he did.
And so I think we need to figure out a way to get back to that. And I'm like, I'm fine if the rules are more black and white. I think we need to use more common sense along with black and white, not discretion of the promoter or discretion of the AMA or whatever. I think it needs to be black and white with common sense. And I think there's a way to do that. And I like the whole Birmingham thing with Deegan.
Again, I guess, bullshit. And I'm not a big Hayden Deegan fan, and he should have that win.
Well, and here's the thing. I heard there were multiple times before even the qualifying started, instead of those track markers that they put out there, multiple times people said, hey, put a tough block there. That way there's absolutely no way in hell anybody can cut 6 inches earlier than what they are supposed to, or 6 inches through what they are supposed to. If they put one of those triangle tough blocks out there, we don't have that. But they said, nah, those flags are going to work.
Yeah.
One gets and knocked out.
They never have. I can't wait for Hayden Deegan to lose a national overall or a championship.
Different set of rules for the outdoors.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's why it's different for the outdoors. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and the fact that, and honestly, it shouldn't be, you know what I mean? If the rule is the rule, like, how do you have athletes on two different disciplines seeing the same marker and, oh, in this sport or in this discipline, I can go around that. And in this discipline, I cannot.
Right.
Explain it.
I'm fine with going back to the old school 90s days and put wooden stakes and string pennant up.
Sure, looked cooler. Definitely looked cooler. We also need cigarette.
You think those guys are going to come within 6 inches of that?
Yeah, exactly. I remember back in the day when it was probably like once every couple rounds, there'd just be someone riding around with like a Honda banner just fucking twirled up in their
20
back,
feet behind them,
minimum
wrapped up in the rear brake, no rear brakes for the rest of the moto.
You know who was famous for that? I don't know if it was just like it's like Josh Grant. Josh Grant, Dollars to Donuts. I bet I could sift through I have a external hard drive with old races on it. I bet I could find 10 different instances where that guy was dragging a Honda banner for a full 45 second racetrack.
Well, he won a Supercross with a tough black cover dragging behind him.
Wasn't it like, and it wasn't like, okay, he was on, oh yeah, he was on a,
KGR Yamaha.
KGR Yamaha, but wasn't it a Yamaha, tough block? Or, like, I think the tough block was funny.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
It was either competing brand or it was like Toyota.
I think it was Toyota, actually.
I think it's Toyota, and Toyota was a team, and it's like, that's just too perfect.
And then wasn't it a Toyota that his bike smashed into at High Point?
More than likely. Or when, who was it that, was it an 80 kid or like when the kid like hit the truck at the Monster Cup?
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't good. Remember the one year where like a bunch of kids tried to do the finish line and like two out of the eight did? And it was just like,
oh, yeah.
It was like Juno Beach. On the landing of that jump.
How about when Ricky came within 3 inches of the boat at St. Louis that year?
That was the last time we saw that Eric Nocte's boat. That was the last
damn time we saw any kind of vehicle in the middle of the freaking racetrack.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Oh, and Rick had some close ones back in the day, especially in the whoops.
How about Lane Shaw's crash in qualifying this weekend?
We got to talk about that. I'm not letting you off this call until we talk about Tristan Lane, the human lawn dart who landed on pillows, essentially. He was back on the motorcycle.
Lane Shaw.
My bad. Not Tristan Lane.
Yeah.
Lane Shaw. We're talking about Lane Shaw, the human lawn dart. He lands on some pillows and able to get back on the motorcycle. Like, these racers are fearless. I don't know. Like, it was wild to see. Were you watching that segment?
No, I had went back into the pits. I was with friends of mine. So we walked back into the pits after the 458 qualifying. So I wasn't there to see it, but then the video clip went through the pits instantaneously. As soon as whoever was watching at home recorded that Perfect. Clip went through, and I'm like, no freaking way. But then nobody knew who it was. All through the comments, not one person said who it was.
Really?
And Yeah, because
well, I guess because it was quite at distance too. The shot that got posted was from the promo or like a stand up piece that AC and Brayton were doing, right?
Right, because I guess the producer, when that happened, in their ears, like screamed,
"Yeah,
holy shit!" But no, because like, well, you know who one of the people I was sitting with during the afternoon show was Moto Chasen.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was sitting with him, and we were looking at that video, and we're like, who in the hell is that? Because nobody, and we first thought Scott Meshey, just because we saw him during qualifying, and he was white Husky or white KTM, whatever he's on, and he got, I haven't seen any.
He gets whiskey sometimes. He gets a little whiskey.
He got burned this weekend.
Ooh.
The radiator cap blew. And right onto his throttle arm.
Jesus, Scott.
So he finally cased. It was that rhythm section where Justin Hill was popping the quad and everything. It was in that rhythm section after the finish. And he came up short on a double and then just let it go. And he was like shaking his arm out, trying to get air to it. About 30 seconds later, he's off the side of the track and I can see the sleeve just hanging there. Like it, I mean, the radiator cap blew off and that shit was steaming right onto his arm. Like it was.
Is he racing this weekend? I feel like I need to reach out. My God,
I think he is.
That's crazy.
Oh, but like it was,
there's a like one thing happens every week that if it happened to a regular person, they'd never touch dirt bikes again in their entire lives, and these guys sign up 6 days later.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, so what you need to do though when you. If you start posting social clips from this episode, if you post a social clip, I was talking about Lane Shaw, you need to add in the Jason Upshaw crash from LA.
I have it
back in the '80s. You need to post that along with it and like, you know, splice this all together. So the younger crowd who probably has never seen that crash, they need to see that.
Yeah. I can clip that piece of media real quick. Yeah, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate you breaking down some storylines with me. I'm excited for Cleveland. This has actually helped me sort of like breathe some excitement back into, some more Supercross action. The more you talk about it, the more you want to see some more, when it comes to Supercross. What are your predictions? And, moreover, what would you like to see happen this weekend in Cleveland?
I want to see it get tight again. I think with this being a triple crown and with it being soft, that seems to be Kenny's bread and butter here lately. So I think he can make up some points this weekend as long as he stays consistent. If they hold true to a triple crown this weekend, we're going to be through each of the first races, you know, both classes before I can even actually watch anything since it's a day race and I got a GNCC to film. So that's a bummer, but yeah, that reminds me, I need to deal with my quote unquote fantasy league Friday evening since I'm not gonna be able to watch anything until 4:30 on Saturday afternoon. But yeah, I want to see it tighten back up in the 450 class. You know, I think Hunter's gonna win this thing, and I got nothing against Hunter. I think Kenny winning this title would be the ultimate storybook ending or, you know, movie script that nobody would have even thought of writing 5 years ago. Like, especially, I mean, yeah, the easiest comparison I can make to Kenny's situation is Henry when he, you know, demolished himself at Bud's Creek the first time. 2 years later, he does it again with his arms. And then the very next year, he comes back, wins the title, first title on a four stroke. Great story. This whole thing with Kenny is 9 years in the making now, ever since that night at Anaheim. And that would be just the ultimate cap on his career. He's won every other damn thing except this Supercross title. And like, I'd like to see Kenny win it. Kenny should have had that title back in 2017. Like the whole sport looks differently if he hadn't gotten hurt that night.
Oh, we're talking, if he doesn't have that crash, we're talking about a three or possibly four time Supercross champion. He was in rarefied form. He was at the absolute pinnacle and was it really didn't seem like anyone could really hang with him. Of course, that year he rolls into the first time we saw him on the Honda, which was Monster Cup. He ends up not being able to defend his Monster Cup title from the previous year because of a similar crash. But either way, we were looking at a guy who was going to be a massive disturbance and win a lot of races, a lot of championships down the stretch. But
For sure. I mean, you know,
and he's still been amazing. That's what's like. Oh, he's an ultimate. Oh, he's an instant Hall of Famer because he had a Hall of Fame career anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and on Hunter's side of it and Honda, I mean, they haven't won that title since 2003.
What?
And the big class title. Or no, I'm damn it, Jet won it. I'm retarded.
And Sexton.
I'm doubly retarded.
That's okay.
It's been a long night.
I'm not going to cut this part out, but
I just lost all credibility with that one.
Yeah, you were lumped in with Lewis, you fucking hack.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, no, that's all right.
I mean, but, you know.
Easy to remember, to forget those years, though, because Jet as a rookie and then Eli, that season, the 2023 season, is Eli. It's just, that's an Achilles injury.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Whatever. Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like that was a dominant run by Chase. And, I mean, and Jet, I mean, he still won it around early, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but that was it, and I mean more of the talk on him the whole even that whole season when he had the red plate the whole time was the fact that he went perfect in outdoors the summer before. So,
is this 2026 Supercross season to you similar to the 2018 season of Eli Tomac, where he was lights out, kicking everyone's ass, taking names, and then in the last few rounds was just like.
Well, I mean, we can put that on 2017. We can put that on 2018. I mean, because he had a shot at it in 17 against Dungey, and he pissed it away at New York.
New York, but not picking the bike up quickly. And then obviously 18. What was the problem on 18? Was that the one where he breaks his pants?
He broke his pants.
And then
it wasn't the same race. He and Marvin got into it.
The following weekend,
right? I think there was another one where he crashed without the pants issue,
right? Well, yeah, and that one also, like, because that 2018 is Anderson's championship, right?
Correct.
So, like, Anderson's good that year. Like, it was like,
I think your mic's cutting out.
My microphone.
Yeah, your mic was cutting out.
Oh, my bad. Did I sec here?
I can hear you clearly now.
Microphone. You can hear me clearly now? Okay. Yeah. That's weird. For whatever reason, it's not giving me an option to use my proper microphone though. Like the microphone is just doesn't matter. We're about to wrap this thing up, but yeah. Anderson was just that good that year. You couldn't give him up an entire race and expect to like be perfect the rest of it and still win the championship. That was Anderson's year. I think he's his best year as a pro, honestly.
It was, because I mean, the next year he got hurt four races in.
Yep.
Hasn't. I mean,
he's never been the same guy since. He had those seven races on a Cowie. Like I think what was that? 21?
22, I think.
22.
Yeah, but I mean, he was looking good this year.
Won a national.
He was looking good this year. And I mean, he looked so good for that World Supercross title.
Hell yeah,
he
did.
We talked about that preseason.
Yep.
I thought he looked good, you know, the first half of this year. And then for obvious reasons, he's not going to be racing with us for the next little while. But no, yeah, he's one of those guys. I hope eventually we get him back because I think he's. I still think he's good for the sport, even though he's not a winning guy anymore, or, you know, right now, at least. I think he's still good for the sport, and he still brings a lot to the table. But
there is a specific fan that, like, loves everything that Jason Anderson's about, as far as his approach to racing, his demeanor, his attitude, like that. I'm talking about the athlete, not the man. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so there is a market segment that they see, Jason Anderson, and they're like, yep, that's my guy. So,
yeah, for sure.
And yeah, like, and there isn't really somebody that can fill that void. So, I hope to see him back at some point once he's, sorted out everything else that's going on in his world.
Right.
Right on. Prediction for this weekend. Who's winning? Who are your winners? 250 class, 450 class.
450, I'll go Kenny. 250 class with a triple crown.
Webb.
Yeah.
Who recently brought a new child into the world today, I believe.
He did.
Revy. Revy Webb. He's got three girls now.
Three girls
for Cooper Webb. No, who's your 450 winner?
I wonder if he can convince Mariah to try for a fourth and maybe get a boy.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Maybe he ended up with four girls.
I don't think he's going to go Tony Alessi in that regard.
No. Tony's got like 17 kids now.
Exactly. But he finally got his boy.
That's right.
He did finally get his boy.
Mike.
No, we got another one.
Okay, good. finally, so like he can leave. What's his wife's name again? I can't remember his wife's name. He can finally leave her alone for a little while.
Right.
But yeah, who you got 450 class?
450, I think I'll go Kenny.
Go Kenny. Bounce back.
Yeah. I think I'll go Kenny. 250 class, mud, north, you know, soft anyway, Northern Ohio, triple crown. I'll go Seth. Your mic completely went out. I can't hear you at all.
Oh, great.
There I can.
Now you can?
Yeah.
Oh. Now used. Okay. You can hear me?
Yep.
I don't know. Something's going on here. We got to get off this call because there's ghosts, I think. I'm going to go with Seth as well. Picking that one with my heart a little bit because I do like the way he approaches racing. I think he's a good kid. Good athlete in general. And then, as far as the 450 class, I think Hunter puts on the gloves and, leaves no doubt on the tail end of the Supercross series. And that's, it's his time to shine.
A stamp this weekend.
Yeah. I think he puts a big old rubber stamp on this thing. And, we can all start to focus on outdoors, after Cleveland.
It's hard to bet against him right now.
Where can people follow along with all things Kyle Wolf?
On my main Instagram page, Wolf Creative Co. That's Wolf with an E. And then, same thing, just Wolf Creative on my YouTube. And that's where I'm posting everything from GNCC. And maybe one of these days I'll get back to posting some Supercross and Motocross content.
Love it, dude. You have yourself a great rest of your day. Don't hang up just yet. For podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.